Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
We're building bridges. Now, the anti-union lobby's newest weapon. How armed and cynical anti-Semitism allegations, the corporate-backed effort to destroy unions, is ramping up. We're joined by Jeff Shiruka, a labor historian, journalist, and union activist who teaches at the Harry Van Arsdale Jr. School of Labor Studies. And we are delighted to have you back, but frightened by the circumstances that you will be calling our attention to, but how good, how important it is to raise the alarm. You are our town crier, Jeff.
It's great to be here.
Jeff, indeed, thank you for joining us, and thank you for the work you do. I want to start now by looking at the issue of what are the tools that are being used that are really trying to reel in the newfound energy and rise of labor. And much of it is being done under the false pretext of anti-Semitism. But why don't we get started perhaps with the Janus decision in 2018 by the Supreme Court that gave license to really trying to silence the political and socioeconomic involvement and expression of the labor movement?
Well, for several decades now, there's been a very strong, well-funded movement of corporations and the political right in this country, the Republican Party, to use every type of legal means they can, whether it's legislation or it's actually court cases, lawsuits, litigation, to undo all of the gains of the New Deal, and that includes the growth of organized labor, the sort of legitimation of unions that happened in the 1930s, and various other things, Social Security, public education, eventually, you know, regulations around pollution, et cetera, et cetera. There's, you know, we know about this from, you know, we hear about ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and the Koch brothers and their whole network of dark money groups that are just really playing the long game. You know, they're very relentless in chipping away at every type of liberal or progressive law or practice that exists. They work at the state level, the local level, and at the federal level. And one of their biggest targets is the labor movement, because obviously, unions are so important to lifting up the voices of working class people and protecting workers on the job and raising standards of living and challenging corporate power and challenging Wall Street and challenging the power of the right in this country. They want to get rid of unions. They want to annihilate unions, these various groups. One of them that people generally know about, ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is sort of like this bill mill, you know, they come up with boilerplate legislation, very conservative right-wing legislation that's all aimed at helping corporations, and it's funded primarily by big corporations. But in addition to ALEC, it's sort of the partner organization of ALEC is something called the State Policy Network, which most people don't know so much about. The State Policy Network, the SPN, which is a web of right-wing think tanks and law firms that operate in all 50 states. The think tanks provide a sort of ideological support for the kinds of laws that ALEC is trying to pass. And the law firms that are associated with SPN are trying to push forward that kind of right-wing litigation. So getting finally to the Janus decision, your question, this was a really momentous Supreme Court decision from 2018, it was Janus versus AFSCME. And basically what the conservative majority ruled in favor of the plaintiff, Mark Janus, who wanted to get out of having to pay agency fees to his union. Janus was a public sector worker represented by AFSCME, the public sector union, And in labor law for many decades, it's been the case where if you are a worker at a unionized workplace, the union represents you, and the union negotiates on your behalf over wages and benefits and working conditions. Now, you don't have to be a member of the union if you don't want to be, but because the union represents you, you do have to pay at least a certain amount of money to the union to cover the cost of representation, to cover the cost of bargaining a contract and enforcing the contract, because the union has the legal duty to represent you, even if you don't want to be a member.
And you get the benefits in any event.
You get the benefits in any event, exactly. So if the union negotiates a 12% raise, and even though you don't want to be a member of that union, you get that 12% raise because of that union. That's the idea behind agency fees. A member would pay full dues, and they would gladly do it and voluntarily do it because they understand the importance of having that collective power of the union, and that the union is funded from by the members themselves. But someone who doesn't want to be a member for whatever reason, they don't pay the full dues, but they at least pay the agency fees to cover the cost of
And we should
representation.
say, additionally, the agency fees are what enable the union to exist and to provide the representation and do the negotiations and so on for the bulk of its membership, and including even those people who opt out. And while they may opt out of paying dues, again, are still getting the benefits, the health benefits, the grievance benefits, and all the other things that come with being represented by a union.
Exactly.
So,
And
how does this
the
then go into? So we've got this issue of the agency fees, and we've got the Janus
and Janus, I
decision.
should say, what Janus did was say that workers in public sector workplaces covered by a union do not have to pay those agency fees. They can be what are called free riders. So they get all the benefits of the union, but they actually are not having to pay agency fees. And the whole point of Janus, of that decision, and why it was pushed by these right-wing groups and pro-corporate groups, was to defund, try to defund and bankrupt unions in the public sector. This is the same thing that so-called right-to-work laws do in the private sector. 26 states have these so-called right-to-work laws on the books that allow workers who are covered by a union contract in a private sector workplace to not have to pay agency fees. And the idea there, again, the whole point is to try to bankrupt union. So yes, the Janus decision from the Supreme Court was a very consequential decision from just a few years ago. So, sorry, I just had to say that.
Of course.
And how does the current protest of the unions of going against U.S. policy toward Gaza, toward the Middle East, toward Palestine, how does this fit into all of that?
So yeah, this is where the recent article I wrote in Jewish Currents called "The Anti-Union Lobby's Newest Weapon." This is what the newest weapon is this weaponization of anti-Semitism that we're seeing. I mean, we've seen it for a long time when it comes to anyone who tries to criticize Israel is smeared as an anti-Semite or as a self-hating Jew or whatever. We've especially seen that in the last few months, this kind of strong and cynical weaponization of anti-Semitism allegations coming from the media, coming from Congress and people and organizations that support the state of Israel. And now that's being picked up on by these same, this group, like this, like I mentioned, this State Policy Network and all these other right-wing corporate-backed groups, particularly the same law firm was responsible for the Janus decision. It's called the Liberty Justice Center. So a lot of these things, right to work, it sounds great. Liberty Justice, that sounds good. But of course, it's always a front for these pro-corporate right-wing groups. And so the Liberty Justice Center, which is part of the State Policy Network, this network of right-wing corporate-backed think tanks and law firms, the Liberty Justice Center was responsible for the Janus decision. And now it recently, just last month, the Liberty Justice Center filed a lawsuit on behalf of two public defenders with the who are members former members of the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys, the union that represents public defenders, public interest lawyers in New York City who work for nonprofits like the Legal Aid Society, which is with these two. And so at the beginning of the current genocide in Gaza last fall, the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys voted to pass a resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, calling for an end to the Israeli occupation of Palestine, and calling for the support of workers' political speech. Of course, it was a big controversy for whatever reason, that just to even pass the resolution, there was an attempt to stop it from the vote even happening, but the vote did happen. It passed by a margin of 1,067 to 570. 65% of the members of the union voted to approve it, and even over 100 Jewish members of the union put forward a statement saying they fully support this resolution. Again, a resolution calling for a ceasefire, an end to the Israeli occupation, and endorsing the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. And two former members of the union who are represented by the union went through this right-wing law firm, the Liberty Justice Center, and filed a lawsuit last month saying they should have the right to not have to pay agency fees. And what the lawsuit is trying to do is basically expand the Janus decision. The Janus decision covers the entire public sector, but
Yeah,
these public def
let me just
yeah,
stop
sorry.
you there, and then we're going to pick up on that. And I should say, with all full disclosure, as a member of the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys, Local 2325, who has been living through this issue, which is so important that Jeff is discussing with us, the thing that just last week, our union president, again, Local 2325 of the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys, which is part of the UAW. So, I mean, there's a context. There's the Liberty Center, there's one of the individuals, a person who works for Legal Aid, Alan Popper, and so on, who is a plaintiff in this. First of all, one of the things that they said, which also was to try to silence the union, which should be known, is that by advocating for a democratic vote in support of a ceasefire, that invariably we were creating a hostile work environment for Jewish lawyers and to try to get us shut down, even though this was a union issue by management. But I think what was most clever here, and this is where I want Jeff to pick up, is I hope people have an understanding of this tremendously important, these right-to-work laws, which ban the mandatory collection of agency fees for private sector unions as a way of shutting down. It's a major weapon to defeat the voice and power of unions in the socioeconomic sphere. So pick up again, as you were beginning to, the issue of now the Liberty
Liberty Justice.
lawsuit. Yes, so I know their name well, the Liberty Justice. And as I said, my own colleagues from the Legal Aid Society, let's put that word colleagues in quotes, who have initiated and become the plaintiff and now have gotten us subpoenaed before Virginia Fox Committee, which we'll get to in a moment. But talk about how important this suit is in terms of the issue of the agency fees for unions like mine, which are not public sector unions.
Yeah, because the idea of this lawsuit is to expand that same the same idea of right to work, the same idea of Janus, to nonprofit employers that receive money from government sources. So these the plaintiffs in this case work for the Legal Aid Society, which is a nonprofit that is contracted by the city of New York to defend indigent defendants in court. It's part of fulfilling the constitutional duty of New York City. And so the argument that the Liberty Justice Center, this right-wing law firm, is making is that these plaintiffs, and it's all because of this pro-Palestine resolution that was democratically passed by the union, that they, quote, should not have to financially support an organization that adopts anti-Semitic resolutions and sides with terrorist organizations, so,
I just
unquote.
want to say one additional thing, your own statistics, that an estimated 80%, which is what I think makes it so incredibly important to understand this. An estimated 80% of all nonprofit revenues in the U.S. coming from government sources, such as a decision in this case, could have major, major ramifications for tens of thousands of workers who have been rapidly unionizing in recent years at nonprofit cultural institutions and advocacy groups. And I do also want to say that the Legal Aid Society are both public defenders, but they do immigration, tenant law, public benefits work, and the like. So the scope of this lawsuit and this extension, they hope, of the Janus decision is really catastrophic to silence unions and potentially put them out of business.
Right. So the basic argument is that because Janus applies to the public sector and that nonprofits that receive money from the government that are technically also therefore public sector, that's the argument they're trying to make, and therefore Janus should apply to them. And yeah, that could affect tens of thousands of workers who have been unionizing in recent years at all different kinds of nonprofits around the country. And at the same time, there's a similar lawsuit that's been going through the courts over the last couple of years by another one of these right-wing law firms called the Fairness Center. They all have these names that make them sound great, but the Fairness Center is also part of the State Policy Network. And this is a lawsuit targeting the faculty and staff union at CUNY, because in 2021, they also passed a pro-Palestine resolution, and a few members of or former members of that union, faculty, full-time professors at CUNY who are covered by the faculty union's contract. The union is the Professional Staff Congress, which is part of the AFT, American Federation of Teachers. Because they're already in the public sector, they already don't have to pay agency fees because of the Janus decision. But they want to go even farther and say that they shouldn't even be represented in bargaining by the union at all. In other words, challenging the principle of exclusive representation, which is a fundamental piece of what organized labor is, because without exclusive representation, bosses could potentially pit workers against each other in negotiations. They could say, I'm going to give you a raise, but not you. And that undermines the whole concept of collective bargaining. This lawsuit, as I said, has been going through the courts for a couple of years. It's been dismissed by a district judge and by an appellate judge, because there's this 40-year Supreme Court precedent that upholds the idea of exclusive representation. But now they're appealing it to the Supreme Court, this very conservative right-wing Supreme Court that was responsible for the Janus decision, also responsible for Dobbs, you know, reversing Roe v. Wade. So this is another major threat that could take away the whole idea of unions representing everyone in a given bargaining unit and undermine the whole idea of collective bargaining. And again, it's all because of a pro-Palestine resolution that the union passed. So the argument I'm trying to make in this article that I wrote is that the same pro-corporate right-wing forces that are always going after unions have been going after unions for years and other types of progressive pro-worker institutions are now using the weaponization of anti-Semitism that we've been seeing, that advocates of Israel have been using all over the place, especially in the last few months. They're using that now to go after the labor movement as well. And of course, these are groups that don't care. I don't think they care at all about Jewish safety or actually battling real anti-Semitism. They just want to destroy unions. They want to, as I said, undo all the gains of the New Deal, and they'll use whatever tactics they can. And they've realized that this cynical use of allegations of anti-Semitism for anyone who criticizes Israel is a really effective weapon or effective instrument of repression that's silencing a lot of people and putting a lot of fear into people and different organizations.
Well, let's put some names on it. Let's deal with the House Committee on Education and the Workforce, which is chaired by Representative Virginia Fox, Ulta MAGA critter. The spirit of McCarthyism is alive and well. As I mentioned earlier, my union president was just summoned for depositions before the House committee. It remains to be seen how we will respond. My own personal hope is that we will do a Paul Robeson, which is to go before the UAC, the House Un-American Activity Committee and the like, and say, I will answer questions that you pose to me on my terms and with my ethic and my ideology and my principle. But tell us more about how the House Committee on Education and the Workforce, Jeff, is actually functioning in relationship to trying to both silence the dissent of the education sphere and particularly now we're speaking about the labor sphere. What's actually happening? And how come there are Democrats on this committee that aren't raising hell as well?
Committee on Education and the Workforce is, because it's in the House of Representatives, controlled by the Republicans. As you mentioned, Virginia Fox is the chair of this committee. She has a long record of being against anti-abortion, anti-LGBTQ, anti-immigrant, anti-union. Now she is presenting herself as this crusader against anti-Semitism. But what she's been doing is going after two of the right wing's traditional enemies, higher education and organized labor. So higher education, we've seen a lot of the headlines and news reports over the last few months of college presidents being dragged to this committee and being grilled by Virginia Fox and others on the committee, questioning them about the Palestine Solidarity activism on campus, accusing these university presidents of, you know, giving in to anti-Semitism, et cetera, et cetera. And most of these university presidents have just allowed themselves to be run over and completely, you know, give up the argument that, yes, any and all Palestine solidarity activism is inherently anti-Semitic. They're sort of just surrendering. And this is what we've seen a lot of liberals, a lot of Democratic politicians have also been going along with or even leading the charge on this idea that any criticism of Israel is anti-Semitism, President Biden chief among them. And I think this is partly what's giving so much encouragement to the right, is the fact that liberals and Democrats are not fighting back. In fact, they're going along with it, which is very similar to McCarthyism and the anti-communist hysteria in the late 40s and early 50s with the House Un-American Activities Committee, similarly subpoenaing people from academia, people from Hollywood, from organized labor, from government agencies, threatening them, threatening to arrest them, demanding that they name names of other so-called subversives. And all of this being used to demobilize the left. And it's similar now. So in addition to going after college presidents and targeting universities, Fox's committee, which is sort of like a new HUAC, is now also going after unions that have passed pro-Palestine resolutions, including the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys, which is also facing this lawsuit that we talked about. And she has subpoenaed the officers of the union. She's demanding to see documents related to this Democratic vote that happened last fall over this pro-Palestine resolution. And so far, the union's officers have been refusing to cooperate, to their credit, because they shouldn't have to cooperate with this. This is a completely unconstitutional attack on the union's own freedom of speech. And she's threatening to charge the union's officers with contempt of Congress. So it's very reminiscent of McCarthyism and HUAC witch hunts of the late 40s, early 50s.
Jeff, so finally, unfortunately, we never have enough time to fully explore this and to go back and look at the way that this has happened previously in the 40s and so on. So I really would like to recommend that people Google Jewish Currents, which I'm pleased to say published this article of Jeff Shruka, which is so important to understand the critique of the Starbucks Workers Union, who protested vehemently against Starbucks' involvement and relationship to the expansion of the settlements from West from the occupied West Bank. But where does this take us now? So your final thoughts on the use of the Janus decision and its progeny in effect, the Liberty Center, the Liberty Justice Center lawsuit. What does this mean for labor? What is the challenge to labor, both in terms of affirmative challenge, what it should be doing, as well as understanding how the right has found another vehicle to eviscerate and to really extinguish the rise up, or what Ken always says is putting the movement back in the labor movement?
Yeah, it shows why I think the U.S. labor movement, U.S. labor leaders in particular, have to overcome the long time hesitation to try to associate with the Palestine Solidarity Movement. They have to realize that the same forces that are violently attacking Palestinians and violently shutting down any kind of pro-Palestine speech are also targeting unions. And so it's not just about unions defending their members' right to free speech around Palestine, but also defending workers' right to have a union in the first place, because that's what these right-wing pro-corporate forces that are now aligned with the pro-Israel forces are trying to do. Is that they basically want to bankrupt and annihilate unions, and they're using this anti-Semitism scare to do it. So the labor movement in the United States should stand with Palestine Solidarity protesters, stand with the cause of Palestinian freedom itself, and push back and fight back against this repression, because it's targeting unions as well.
As we say, there is the movement being put back in the labor movement. Workers are on the rise, and when workers and community come together, well, workers of the world unite, we have nothing to lose but our chains and
a world to win.
And Jeff's going to help us get there. Jeff Scirocca, I want to thank you so much for the work you do, and keep on keeping on, my dear friend.
Thank you.
I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
Never enough time, but we keep on keeping on to agitate, educate, and organize for another world as possible, and we're going to make it so. Thanks for listening to Building Bridges. That's what we do.